I'm Dean K, backstage at Radio Bonnaroo with the band OK Go. Welcome.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for having us. Very exciting to be here.
We got Damien and Tim from the band, originally from Chicago, now Los Angeles.
Yeah, the band started in Chicago, although none of us, well, our drummer grew up in Chicago and the other three of us from all over the place. So so Chicago is sort of a temporary home. And I followed a girl to Los Angeles, and Tim followed the Sunshine, and then the other band members followed us, and so now we're an LA band.
The third album of The Blue Color of the Sky came out in January on EMI Capital, but you're now working with a new record label, right?
Yeah, my dogs are the primary investors in our record label.
And by dogs, he doesn't mean like his friends.
Yeah, I don't mean my dogs. I mean like we left our major label and started our own label, so that we only have to, you know, deal with, for instance, my pets.
And what's the name of the label?
It's called Paracadute, which means parachute in Italian. It's my second favorite word after pamplemousse. But you can't, I mean, pamplemousse doesn't really make a lot of sense for a record label, whereas parachute in these times of record company strife, lots of sense. And it's really fun to say, Paracadute.
You both met at an arts camp when you were 11. I understand that's where the name of the band came from. You want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, well, we were at a sort of nerdy band camp, and we had an art class, and the teacher was a grad student, and she taught us a great deal about art. However, her assistant must have been, I don't know, maybe 18 or 19. And we just thought he had the craziest, like, body odor, but we later learned that that's
smell of marijuana.
That's the smell of marijuana.
Yeah.
And he would give us these interesting, like, words of advice while we were drawing. So, like, an average class, say, we'd be like, you draw a still life for, like, 45 minutes, you know? And so 20 minutes into it, say I'm Kirk now and Tim's still being Tim. Tim is drawing. Draw Tim. You can't hear this on the radio, but he is drawing. And I then stand right behind his shoulder and say, hey, Tim. Hey, Tim, man. I want you to, like, touch the paper with your hand and then touch the still life with your mind and draw the difference. And Tim, of course, still drawing at this time, sort of going like, wow, this guy smells pretty interesting. And then he'd sort of sit there for a little while with this guy hovering over him, and then Kirk would start going, okay, 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 Tim, okay, go. And that was the moment, I think, when we were supposed to have, like, the psychedelic deflowering, you know? Like, we were supposed to just, like, burst, like, Zeus was going to burst out of our heads, and we were going to become one with the universe, but we were 12 and
really good artists.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
Yeah, not then. Not until we were less, I mean, you know, more than 12 and a little more in his condition.
So what happened is you became OK Go.
Yes, we became OK Go. Well, what happened was, well, we made jokes about it for a long time, and you know, Tim and I have been making stuff together since we were 12, and there was, you know, there were we made videos, and we made little movies, and we made songs, and we made artwork, and a lot of poster prints and writing and stuff, and so there's been a lot of inside jokes along, you know, through the years, and we actually made a film about a fake band called The OK Goes, and then when we started our real band, it was like, well, you know, I guess we should just take that name.
And how long after this camp did the band actually become serious as a musical
About
force?
10 years.
10 years, I think.
Yeah, we were 12 then, or I was 12, you were 11.
Yeah.
I think we started touring around age 22 or so.
Yeah, right.
And that is now 12 years ago, 11, 12 years ago.
That's quite a friendship. Has that paid off in the band so far?
Not really, no. I mean...
It's only gotten worse.
Yeah, we don't, I mean... You've probably noticed throughout the interview that Tim's not really allowed to look at me because that, you know, stems from an incident last year.
Do tell.
Legally, we can't talk about it.
It's actually a rare, one of those rare things where I'm allowed to be in the same room with Tim because you know, the restraining order doesn't apply to performances. So.
I was wondering what all the lawyers were doing here, so now
I
understand.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, so many disparagement clauses between the two of us.
Yeah, yeah. Other people go for non-disparagement. We just go straight up for disparagement clauses. We just disparage each other illegally.
Right.
Ira Glass and his show This American Life factored prominently in the band's career, using you as the house band.
Mm-hmm.
He calls you human catnip. He also describes your sound as part indie rock, part stadium rock, part straight-up pop, occasional whiff of Weezer, The Cars, Elliott Smith. It's a nice summation, but how would you describe the sound of OK Go?
Blam?
Bland?
But no, blam. B-L-A-M.
So using onomatopoeia?
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of onomatopoeia. Artie Party is a good one.
Yeah. We've been described as Artie Party before, which feels right to me. You know, our sound has changed a lot in the last, you know, few years. I think when we started the band, you know, we grew up worshiping the Pixies and Fugazi and a lot of sort of DIY punk rock from, you know, I grew up in D.C. and that was really my like main stream of influence. And I think by the time we were playing together in our early 20s, there was a lot of like hyper pop influence. We had gone through this like indie post punk thing, and we really wanted Elvis Costello and Cheap Trick and the Cars and like just like some like really like sink your teeth into it songwriting, overproduced Queen, you know what I mean, like
Roy Thomas Baker,
yeah. And we did, and I think that it while that masked the sort of like the guitar, like, you know, guitar driven punky roots of us wanting to be musicians, period. We always sort of thought about writing and being a band from a kind of guitar driven perspective. And after 7 years on the road, basically, I think we started to expand that set of influences, such that you go back home to write a record and you like lock yourself in your garage and crank up the amp to 11 and like do the big windmill to try to impress yourself with how like awesomely rocking this is, and it's just kind of, it sounds like your job, you know, it just like starts, oh, there's that big guitar sound again. And so this recent record we just put out is a very low on distorted guitars, very high on distorted drums. It's just a lot dancier, and there's a lot more older influences, music that I don't think we realized we would wind up writing towards. Like things we listened to when we were 12. I mean, there's a lot of Prince on the record, and a lot of like sort of even kind of Manchester-y stuff.
Yeah, right, like Blur and things like that.
Going back to your foundations.
Yeah, not entirely intentionally. Basically, I think we used to write in a much more kind of goal-oriented way. So it's like you sort of like the way you speak verbally. Like you kind of have this vague thought, you kind of know where you're headed, and you parse words in your brain, and you put together some grammar for it, and out comes this like fully made sentence, or you hope. And so there was a lot of like. You know, we used to write. Our first big single was a song called "Get Over It," and it was definitely us saying, like, you know, the world needs new stadium rock anthems, so let's write one. And it was a pretty specific, like, we know what we're headed for, and let's get there. And this record, when we started writing that way, I think we've become so used to what it is that we're good at as a band, or we do well live, or people expect to hear from us, that we started, the endpoints of those goals started becoming what we already were, and you get this feedback loop of sort of trying to sound like yourself, and then it gets really fraudulent and weird sounding, and kind of sounded like us covering us or something, and it didn't feel like real songs, like close to our heart. And so we had to kind of scrap the whole thing and start from scratch, just learn a new way to write, and that was basically just like experimenting with sounds until something really like resonant and emotive came out. And it often wasn't at all where we expected. And then you wind up with this record that sounds like Prince, and you're like, I guess it's Prince that's living inside me.
It was more writing by feeling, you know.
So you don't really know where you're going to go. I mean, it's
exactly,
you're kind of reinventing yourself as you go with this.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, we're pretty lucky because the things that have succeeded for us are largely not, you know, the standard music industry driven. So the things that people come to expect in the big industry, you know, you have a big single and that gets your CD in the rack at Walmart, you know, next to the candy, and then that means the next time you want to record anything, it better sound like that song, because otherwise it's not going to get on the rack next to candy at Walmart, and your career is going to suffer, and people aren't going to want to work, and it's like everything tumbles downhill from there. And so bands kind of get stuck in this thing where no matter how successful and how awesome things are going, you can get in these creative ruts because there's so much pressure to stay doing what you're doing. And the only thing that people have really come to know us for, like across the board, is doing things that they didn't expect, like, you know, a treadmill video or the Rube Goldberg machine video or performing underwater or you know, running our own label instead, you know, dropping a major instead of getting dropped by one. I mean, there's all these sort of exterior things that let us do, for the most part, like every time we've switched our musical style, our fans have been right there with us, and no one's been like, but wait, that doesn't sound like the last record. And It's great. It's a lot more fun that way.
You've avoided the factor of success being your worst enemy because you have to live up to those achievements before.
So far. We got a lot of questions about whether or not we have to live up to the videos, but even that is sort of like, not really. I mean, you know.
On the video subject, you did win a Grammy for the best short form music video in 07 for Here It Goes Again. It's been viewed by over 50 million times on YouTube. How did that video come to be? We're talking about the treadmill.
It was my sister's idea. Yeah, the video was us dancing on treadmills. We had made a video more or less accidentally. We had come up with a dance routine to do on stage, so that when to kind of break that wall in the standard of rock shows. I mean, people have kind of been doing the same thing since the 70s or something. Like, I stand up here and be cool, and you guys stand down there and occasionally dance and mostly just smoke and try to look cool also. And anything you can do to sort of shake that up and reconnect, like, with the audience, get something happening that everyone's surprised by and excited by, and just get that kind of collective emotion going, is great. And so we wanted to be able to drop our instruments on stage and break into dance. And so my sister helped us choreograph this ludicrous dance, and we were practicing it in my backyard. We shot a practice video of it, and then the video itself was just so entertaining that we started passing around to our friends. And the next thing you know, it had been downloaded like 500,000 times, and we're like, I guess it's actually sort of a music video. Well, if that's acting like a music video, we should go make one. Like, we should make a music video based on this idea, and we knew we had to up the ante with the dancing. So in come the treadmills.
We didn't really tell anyone we were going to do it, though. We held on to that video for about a year because we weren't quite sure like when the right time would be to put it out, or if there ever would be a right time to put it out.
We didn't tell our label. We didn't even tell our management, because like, who's going to say, yeah, that's a good use of your time. Go spend 10 days in Orlando jumping around on treadmills with a home video camera.
Your new video is going to be premiered on the Lunar Stage, 1:30 p.m., right before the World Cup game tomorrow. Do you have any teasers for the listeners?
It's all one take, as we are as many people know us for, except this time the take is 21 hours long.
Wow, an endurance.
Well, it was it took us a week to film the video, but we only got two takes. It's one long take, 21 hours long, and compressed, of course, down to 4 minutes. So sometimes time is going 500 times faster than real time, and sometimes it's going 500 times slower than real time.
I'm Dean. Someday we'll release the 21 hour.
Yeah, totally.
Be like 200 motels from Zappa or something. I'm Dean Kay for Radio Bonnaroo with OK Go. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks for having us.
OK Go.